ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's December the 22nd. It's Monday. I'm Sabra Lane, coming to you from Nipaluna, Hobart. Australia's Jewish community is defiant, declaring we are unbreakable during a moving vigil last night at the site of last week's terrorist attack at Bondi Beach. Peace and unity were the strong messages at the event, but the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, was jeered and heckled, while senior Jewish leaders appealed to him to put in place separate Royal Commission hearing into the atrocity, and those calls were backed by audience applause. Catherine Gregory was at Bondi Beach for the vigil.
Peaceful, solemn and unified.
Shir Hamaloi Slidovid.
Thousands observed prayer and at 6:47 took a minute's silence, marking exactly 1 week since the gunman opened fire at the Hanukkah festival at Bondi Beach, killing 15 people and culminating in the worst terrorist attack in Australian history. Rabbi Yechorman Ullman, whose son-in-law, Rabbi Eli Schlanger, was killed in the shooting, says they need to reclaim Sydney.
Sydney can and must become a beacon of goodness.
And on the final night of Hanukkah, the main message was clear. Light will win over darkness.
We are proud of who we are. We're not going to hide.
If anything, this just pushes our community to be more Jewish.
Amid the grief and calls for togetherness was anger, some of it directed towards the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, who was there to pay his respects.
The Prime Minister of Australia, Anthony Albanese.
Many of the Jewish people at the event say the Albanese government hasn't done enough to protect their community, despite their warnings about rising anti-Semitism over the past 2 years.
I think the most powerful thing he could do for our community is just to say sorry. You know, he tries and defends a record, but likewise, we've never seen the levels of anti-Semitism that we have over the past 2 years.
Do you think we need a royal commission?
Absolutely. And I simply don't understand the reticence to do that.
New South Wales Jewish Board of Deputies President David Ossip also spoke, calling for the PM to act.
It cannot be disputed that we need a royal commission beyond New South Wales to get to the bottom of how this catastrophe took place.
New South Wales Premier Chris Minns received cheers and a generous applause.
We are deeply sorry. We grieve with you, and with humility, I acknowledge that the government's highest duty is to protect its citizens, and we did not do that 1 week ago.
The threat to the Jewish community was clear by the heavy security at the event. There were hundreds of police, as well as the Special Tactical Force and police snipers poised on rooftops nearby. But that didn't stop the crowd from remembering the 15 victims of the attack, particularly the youngest, 10-year-old Matilda, her song playing as her parents embraced, dancing among the crowd.
Mama won't sing Matilda with me.
Catherine Gregory reporting there. Penny Wong is the Foreign Minister, the Leader of the Government in the Senate and a member of the National Security Committee of Cabinet, and she joins us. Welcome back this morning.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
New South Wales Premier Chris Minns was given a very warm reception at the Bondi event last night, acknowledging a deep vein of anti-Semitic hate in the community. The Prime Minister was heckled. He wanted to speak at the event but was not allowed to. Could the federal government response to rising anti-Semitism since October the 7th permanently stain the Albanese government's record?
First, Sabra, what I'd say is we see there's great grief, there's pain, there's trauma and there's anger. We've had 15 Australians killed in an horrific, evil, anti-Semitic attack on Jewish Australians, and all Australians feel such sorrow, as do I, and what I would say to all who are grieving is you're not alone. On anti-Semitism, you know, look, this is what we know is that we all have to confront anti-Semitism. We have to make sure our security agencies have all the power they need, and we need an exhaustive investigation, and we need to come together. Ultimately, this attack is an attempt to divide us, and we will not let that happen.
To To the point of that question, though, the government's response to those attacks more than 2 years ago, will that now stain the government's record?
Look, we have announced a number of additional actions to eliminate anti-Semitism in the wake of Sunday's attack, and we've engaged very closely with Gillian Seagull. I'd make the point that, or 2 points actually. The first is the action that was taken by the government over the last couple of years. You've seen us crack down on hate speech. You've seen us criminalise doxing. You've seen us be very clear about counter-terrorism laws, banning Nazi salutes and so forth. We expelled the Iranian ambassador following the Islamic Revolutionary Guard's role in the firebombing of the Adas synagogue. But I said last week that we needed to do more, and we are, which is why we have announced a stronger package of legislative reforms to crack down on those who spread hate, division and radicalisation. Now, the Prime Minister has said, of course, we recognise whilst we have done a great deal on hate speech and anti-Semitism, we have to do more, and we take responsibility for that.
You take responsibility? You just heard the package before. Is it also time to say sorry?
Look, I think all of us wish that we were not where we are. We all wish that the ISIS-inspired terrorist attackers had been stopped. We all wish that anti-Semitism had not continued in this country. And I think I've been on this program with you, Sabra. I have over and over again, as Foreign Minister said, that we all needed to turn the temperature down over the last 2 years. I have argued that we must not bring the conflict to Australia. You have heard me say that, and that has always been my position.
The government has announced an inquiry, but that didn't assuage the audience last night. Several calls for a federal royal commission were applauded. The former Chief Justice of the High Court, Robert French, has issued a lengthy statement saying there is a moral imperative for an inquiry in the most effective as a Commonwealth royal commission, alongside state inquiries, to publicly examine the nature and sources of anti-Semitism and practical measures which could be available or which were available to Commonwealth and state. Given that intervention, and it's a strong one, will the federal government reconsider it?
Look, can I say first, the Prime Minister has announced a review of our law enforcement and intelligence agencies, and that is not an internal review. It's a review led by Dennis Richardson.
Well, with respect, it is an internal review because it's led by Mr. Richardson and he is widely regarded, but it is within the Prime Minister's office and that is not independent.
It's not within the Prime Minister's office. That's not accurate, Sabra. So please.
That is what the announcement was made yesterday.
It's within the Prime Minister's department, Prime Minister and Cabinet. But it is led by Dennis, and I've worked with Dennis, and I think you are aware of, you know, his reputation. I don't think anybody would doubt Mr. Richardson's willingness to tell it as it is to whichever government is in power. That has been his career. But the focus of that, and this is important because it is our responsibility to keep Australians safe, is to ensure that federal law enforcement, federal intelligence agencies have the right power, structures and processes and sharing arrangements to keep Australians safe in the wake of what has been an horrific attack.
Jewish leaders, as I mentioned earlier, David Ossip and Dan Agion last night called for a Commonwealth Royal Commission that was met with public applause. Josh Frydenberg, the former federal treasurer, says a failure to call a royal commission of this nature is the latest failure in federal leadership. And he asks, what are you afraid a royal commission might uncover? And many Australians might wonder the same thing this morning.
Well, I think that's imputing intentions which are not there. I think the focus that we have at the moment is to make sure that our agencies have the powers to keep people safe. And that's why the Prime Minister and the National Security Committee have focused on a review which ensures we get that information quickly, which is by April, because, you know,
The Bondi Beach attack is the worst attack, terror attack on Australian soil, and if that doesn't warrant a royal commission, what would?
Well, I think the Prime Minister said we would cooperate with the State Royal Commission, but I, again, if I can come back to why we want to ensure our agencies have power, the powers they need. We have to make sure that our national security arrangements are fit for purpose and are able to keep people safe. And we need to learn from any mistakes, if there were any, made in the context of these attacks, in a context where we see ISIS, an extremist ideology, in our country. Now, this is the same organisation that the United States has just engaged in bombing raids on. It is, we all saw ISIS's perverse ideology and violent acts in the early part of the last decade. They've killed hundreds of thousands of people around the world, most of them Muslim, and now we have ISIS-inspired terrorism in our country. So our focus is, what do we have to do to keep Australians safe? And a review that reports by April gives government and the country the assurance that we are doing that.
The Prime Minister acknowledged last week that more could have been done, and he accepted his responsibility for that part of that. Do you regret, for example, not visiting southern Israel, where the October the 7th atrocities took place, when you visited Israel last year?
Yeah. I regret the way in which people have experienced that. What I would say to you is I met instead with hostage families. I met instead with people who had either lost their children or father or who were waiting for news of them. And I also went to Yad Vashem, which is the Holocaust Memorial in Israel, which was extremely moving. So what I would say to you is that alongside that, I've also, as you know, went to the commemoration of the liberation of Auschwitz. I'm very aware of the thousands of years of persecution that the Jewish people have experienced, and I am so deeply pained as someone who has argued all my life for an inclusive Australia to see the sort of prejudice, the hate that this act demonstrates. And I'm absolutely determined to continue to say that we are safer when we stand together, and that is what our country must do.
What more have you been able to glean, if anything, from the Philippines or any other nations about the two gunmen and what might help they might have had in carrying out this attack?
Sabra, as you know, this week one of the things I've been doing is engaging with my international counterparts, and I thank them for their support, their condolences and their cooperation. In relation to the Philippines, I'm not in a position, because that is under active investigation, to give you more details. What I will say is we are very grateful for the cooperation that the Philippines at all levels, including its law enforcement and security agencies, are providing to Australia. We are working with them closely.
Have we been able to glean more information? You just can't go into the details?
I can't go into an active investigation, Sabra.
Penny Wong, thanks for joining AM this morning.
Good to speak with you.
Using artificial intelligence tools to cheat is a problem that universities are grappling with. High schools are as well. AM has spoken with a number of high schools and parents, and we're hearing that students are being pulled out of class, held back after school, referred to principals and forced to prove they're not cheats, while parents are being kept in the dark. One father has taken his son's school to task, leading to a six-month saga with the New South Wales Education Department and New South Wales Ombudsman. Julia Bergen prepared this report.
It was nearing the end of what was supposed to be just another school day for Gabe Jones. But as he began his final lesson...
They pulled me out of my last class of the day and then held me all the way until after school.
The 18-year-old was seated opposite two teachers and grilled about the authenticity of his Year 12 assessment, an AI detector tool which the New South Wales Public High School later determined was wrong, had flagged Gabe's work as AI-generated, and for the second time in 5 days, he had to prove, on his own, that he wasn't a cheat.
It felt like an interrogation, like if I was a criminal in court and I had to prove that I was a good guy.
Gabe says his teachers wanted evidence, a sentence-by-sentence breakdown of his 3,000-word assignment.
I was kind of freaking out a bit, and I remember my teacher at one point saying, "Oh, it's okay, it's okay. We know you didn't do it, but you need to prove it." It's just a thing that we need to do because the Department of Education has told us to do it.
Meanwhile, his parents weren't told a thing.
The school hadn't notified us about anything.
That's Gabe's father, Trevor Jones. He says it was his son who eventually told him what happened with the AI detector tool.
I was fairly outraged to start with, just to know that they were using this tool. And so when I found out the process that Gabe had gone through, I put the complaint in with the Department of Education.
That triggered a six-month saga involving the school, Davidson High School, the New South Wales Department of Education and the New South Wales Ombudsman. In written correspondence seen by the ABC, the school told Trevor Jones it answered to the department. The department said AI policies were a matter for the school, and the Ombudsman said it could do nothing while the department investigated. The school did get it wrong. Gabe didn't use AI. He was cleared, his marks restored, and he finished his HSC. But despite this, 5.5 months later, the department concluded the school and itself had acted, quote, in line with the relevant department procedures.
The Department of Education guidelines on AI specifically say there are no reliable AI detection tools and they should not be used. And yet the school is using it, and their answer to that was, well, I haven't been told by the Department of Education to stop using it.
In correspondence with Trevor Jones, the department said it only released that advice after he made his complaint in May this year. But archives show it was published on the New South Wales government website more than a year earlier. It was removed a few months ago and remains that way. The ABC understands currently AI detector tools aren't recommended, but they are allowed. The state's Department of Education would not comment on specific allegations, but in a statement it said AI detected tools were not there to replace human judgment. University of Queensland teaching and technology expert Professor Jason Lodge says schools need to stop trying to catch AI cheats.
The job of the assessment is to find evidence of learning, not to find evidence of cheating. What we shouldn't be doing is looking for evidence of cheating, because that's a very complicated task. We don't have reliable AI detectors at all that can do that task.
Professor Jason Lodge ending that report by Julia Bergen. Doctors are being forced to delay surgery with some patients because of an increasing number of people taking Ozempic-like drugs and not declaring it before they turn up for surgery. These drugs can pose a heightened risk of life-threatening consequences under anaesthetic. The Australian New Zealand College of Anaesthetists has now updated its guidelines to deal with the emerging issue. National Health reporter Stephanie Dalzell has the story.
So I went from like a size 12 to 14 to a size 8.
Talking about Ozempic.
Saturating social media, spruiked by influencers and synonymous with weight loss and celebrities. Ozempic and drugs like it are transforming the health landscape. But the breakthrough class of treatments posing an additional challenge for doctors to manage during surgery, according to the president of the Australian and New Zealand College of Anaesthetists, David Story.
The issue for us as anaesthetists is it slows the emptying of the stomach, or leading to what is known as retained gastric contents.
GLP-1 drugs are a class of medication that mimic the activity of a natural hormone, helping people feel full for longer. But because they slow digestion, Professor Story says they can potentially increase the risk of what's known as pulmonary aspiration during surgery.
That is where someone regurgitates what's in their stomach and it's breathed into their lungs or passes into their trachea. And some patients with this condition can die. And this is what we're really concerned about.
Anaesthetists say patients are arriving for surgery without telling doctors they're on GLP-1 drugs because they'd either forgotten, didn't realise it counted as medication, or were embarrassed about using weight loss drugs. President of the Australian Society of Anaesthetists, Vida Valunis, says she's also encountered patients who've stopped the medication prior to surgery but didn't realise it had a lasting impact.
These drugs last for a long time, certainly more than 2 weeks, sometimes more than 4 weeks. They still have this effect on the transit of food through the gastrointestinal tract.
Doctors stress the chances of pulmonary aspiration remain low, and that they were using different ways to administer anaesthetic or even delaying surgery altogether to help reduce the risk.
National Health reporter Stephanie Dalzell with that report. That is AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Sabra Lane.